Welcome back to episode 8 of Ball Talk with Bun. Today, I'm going to dive into the NBA outlook, some injuries throughout the West and the East, including Giannis, Kawhi. Those are some huge injuries. Of course, I'm going to look into the playoff picture as of now. We pretty much have everything squared away besides the play-in teams, but pretty much all the games for the playoffs are pretty much in order. We're going to preview some of that. And of course, we want to talk about UConn and its dominance throughout the past 2 years in the tournament, and what this could mean for the NCAA, what it means for Dan Hurley. And I wanted to talk about, of course, Kentucky. Losing John Calipari is a big deal. That has to be brought up. But first, I'm going to start with the Mavs-Clippers series that is official. Now, whoever gets home court advantage, it will be an advantage. It will be huge. But at the same time, I'm looking at just Mavs team right now, and it might not even matter. It might not even matter. The Mavericks, a couple pods ago, I mentioned that they're dangerous but not a threat, but now they look like a serious threat. They've won, 15 or the last 20. I don't know. They say all the stats about it, but they've been winning. Long story short, they've been winning the past 2.5 months. I think the move with Daniel Gafford there was huge. It's obviously huge. He literally doesn't miss. Luka's finding him the right spots. Luka's setting him up the perfect spots of the game, perfect spots on the court. It's just a perfect fit. And then PJ there, too, his defensive impact has been huge. Going up against Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler, Devin Booker, Jamal Murray, and Nikola Jokic a couple days later. He's had a slate of games coming to Dallas and having to be the primary defender or the second primary defender next to Derrick Jones Jr. He's had a huge impact. He had a huge game against Golden State, had 30-plus, a huge game-winning layup against Golden State the other day. And I believe that this is a team that needs to be taken seriously. I believe this is a team that is now a threat, given their consistency and given the emergence of Luka and Luka and Kyrie's chemistry has now emerged. And this is something that people need to view as a serious threat. This is scary. This is really scary. And sometimes I sit and wonder, what if Kyrie never missed X amount of games? What if Derek Lively doesn't miss his game? Derek Lively missed some time. Kyrie missed some time. Derek Jones Jr. missed some time. Josh Green has missed some time. Kleber missed a significant amount of time. All these injuries they've had, and they still were afloat. And now they're at a 5 seed, now that they're fully healthy. And I just sit and wonder, if they were fully healthy and had a consistently healthy roster throughout the year, they could be in the top 3, top 2, top 4. They could be the 1 seed. That's how good they've been. That's how good Luka is. And I feel like them going up against the Clippers, this is the third time in Luka's career that he's playing against the Clippers in the playoffs. And I feel like this time around, the team is better. He is better. Certainly, there is a better coach now, I feel like, in a way, when Jason Kidd over Rick Carlisle. But this Clippers team, I'm very high on that. I'm very high on that Clippers team as well. Lock in on the Mavs. It kind of won't sound very, very logical given how, we all trash the Clippers and we joke on the stuff. But the Clippers are for real. The Clippers are for real. They beat Phoenix the other day on the road. No Kawhi, no James Harden. They almost beat Phoenix last night. At home, no Kawhi, no James Harden, and no Paul George, and no Russell Westbrook. So, this Clippers team, similar to the Mavs, I feel like their point guard and Harden orchestrates it, and everyone flows to him. It's a scary team, just like the Mavs. The thing is, the Clippers' age, I think with their age, there does come experience. But at the same time, in a 7-game series where they have to defend a Luka Doncic, a Kyrie Irving, run around and chase all those shooters and have to go put up 30 themselves, I think that's going to be a lot to ask out of Kawhi Leonard, out of Paul George, who are aging compared to 2, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I mean, now it's just a completely different outlook. But, I mean, you look at the age they have. You look at their bench and how they also have age. I think that could play a factor in this series and this series going on if they do beat the Mavs, because the better teams in this Western Conference are younger than them. with experience. The Timberwolves have experience. Anthony Edwards has playoff experience. Rudy Gobert has playoff experience. Karl-Anthony Towns has playoff experience. Obviously, the Nuggets. Jokic just won a championship. Jamal Murray, all those boys, they all have experience. And the Nuggets have beaten the Clippers before in the playoffs. So it's like when you see these other teams, these teams that can match up with your firepower but are younger than you, there has to be some sort of counter. There has to be some sort of extra game plan, an adjustment that Ty Lee would have when it comes to going up against teams like a Dallas. Obviously, they're going to see Dallas in a couple weeks. Or if they advance in Oklahoma City, if they advance a Denver, a Minnesota, a Phoenix. They could see Phoenix. They could still see Phoenix. They could still see the Kings. They could see any of these teams in the West, given how wild and a mess it is. But with that being said, the Clippers are still very much right there with everyone else. This unbeatable gimmick that everyone talks about with Boston and Denver, I think it needs to stop. I've spoken very highly of Denver and Nikola Jokic before, but I don't want it to seem like that I think or feel like Denver is unbeatable. Denver is really good. They should be the favorite. They should be the clear favorite, but they're not unbeatable. They are not unbeatable. The Clippers can beat them. I feel like the Mavs can beat them. I feel like those are the biggest two threats. Then, of course, the Timberwolves right there, and they got to figure out the Karl-Anthony Towns situation. But, like I said, man, compared to 4 years ago in the bubble when Luka played the Clippers, you know, Trey Burke is not on the court anymore. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is not on the court anymore. Bojan Marjanovic, I probably botched his name. He's not on the court anymore. You don't have Porzingis on the court for 30 minutes, and then he's off the court for the rest of the series. You know, there's nothing like that going on. This is a serious Dallas team with a serious franchise player in Luka, who has a running mate in Kyrie, Batman and Superman. You have the dangerous duo, and on top of that, the rest of the roster is complete. They're deep. They're stacked. They're loaded. They can shoot the ball. Now Dallas can defend. Now Dallas can rebound. They've already had the rim protection, but now it's more consistent. Good luck, L.A. Good luck, L.A. And if we're in a situation where the Mavs do win the series, and we just saw Boston secure Drew Holiday, you know, serious franchises, they secure their players. They make sure their players are getting their check, make sure their players don't have anything to worry about going to the next offseason. Paul George has not received any check yet. James Harden, we don't know about his future. We don't know about Westbrook's future. Kawhi, we'll never know what he's feeling like. So, if the Mavs do find themselves advanced to the next round and they beat the Clippers, and the Clippers lose first round after acquiring James Harden earlier in the season, that's going to be a huge summer and a messy summer in LA. And I feel like it could happen. But the Clippers are right there. They're right there. As for the injuries, I believe I already mentioned Kawhi being out, but if you follow Ty Lue's history, if you know of Ty Lue's history, you know, you don't really know, like, what's wrong with Kawhi. And, you know, the Clippers, they rested last night, but given how last year and 2 years ago, when Kawhi got hurt in the playoffs, he tore his ACL. But the injury report was saying day-to-day, game-time decision, questionable. When the whole time in reality, he had a torn ACL. Now, they're doing the same thing now. And I'm not going to sit here and say, all right, maybe Kawhi's ACL is torn, or maybe Kawhi's really more injured than they're saying. But what I'm saying is I'd be worried because, for one, he's Kawhi. And two, they literally gatekeep what's wrong with him. The same thing, I feel like the same way with Giannis. Giannis was walking, not even, he wasn't walking, he was jogging on the other side of the court and literally fell down. And they said he's just had a calf strain. Are we sure he didn't tear his Achilles? Y'all are saying this now, but there's no further reassurance, there's no further explanation. He has a calf strain, he's out for the remaining three games. The dude fell down while walking. And it's a calf strain. He didn't tear his Achilles. It's stuff like that. Like, if I'm a Bucks fan, if I'm a Clippers fan, that bothers me. That you guys won't really give out what's going on with the best player on the team. And in Giannis' sense, the best player in the world, arguably. That's real bothersome. It's real worrisome. And something that wouldn't really sit with me well as a Clipper, especially as a Bucks fan, given what happened, how scary it was. But as a Clippers fan, as a Bucks fan, that wouldn't sit well with me. Not knowing what's really going on with my superstar players. Oh yeah, he has a right knee soreness. Kawhi just doesn't have a right knee soreness issue. Right knee soreness. The knee he so happened to tear up the last 2 years is sore. After he tweaked it in a game. It's just sore. I'd be scared, man. I'd be scared. Karl-Anthony Towns, he's about to come back. Thank God. Because watching Minnesota, even with him, it's hard. I'm gonna be honest, it's hard. Seeing Gobert trying to post up while Anthony Edwards wants to ISO on the same side, it's hard to watch. It's really hard to watch. I hope Towns comes back full strength, because if he is full strength, that's a title contender. That is a serious title contender. But him being there would certainly help, especially on offensive end and on defense. I mean, that's 2 7-foot guys. You're going to see Jokic eventually. You're going to see the best guards in the West. You're going to see which are the best in the league, by the way. But you're going to see you're trying to stop Jokic. That's why you brought in Gobert. So having Towns there helps. It helps. And it helps offensively, too, because Towns can stretch out any defense with the spacing he has and the shooting ability, the skill off the ball, the skill with the ball in his hands. He makes off-schedule plays. He's a great offensive player. He's a great offensive player. And I want people to look at this team as a very – well, they're competing for one seed, so you can't look at them like that. But I want this team to be recognized – as a title favorite, as a title contender. And I feel like the way that we view the Mavs, the way we look at the Clips or the Nuggets, we don't look the same way towards the Timberwolves, and I don't understand why. They have the best defense in the league by far, I feel like, and they have an emerging superstar in Anthony Edwards. Karl-Anthony Towns gets back. This team is just as good as anyone in the West, in my eyes. They could beat anybody in the West. They could beat anybody in the league. So him being there makes it very, very, very challenging. Whoever they play, whether it be a Lakers, whether it be a Warriors, a Kings, a Pelicans, a Suns, it's going to be very challenging. Cause that when that team is complete and they're fully healthy, you know, they were the one seed for a reason. And it's almost like no one talks about them. They're overlooked in a way. And, I feel like if Towns were healthy all year long, then maybe we would talk about them more. Maybe they'd be getting more love from everybody in terms of title contenders and hype and team hype. They've won this amount of games over the past this amount of games, whatever. I don't ever hear about them. I want people to look out for them too, just like I want people to look out for the Mavs. But the difference is this team is actually a title contender. This team has been a title contender. They're just not looked at it that way. They never have been. And with Towns back, like Dallas, they need to be looked as a title contender. They're extremely, extremely dangerous to Denver. Extremely dangerous to the Clippers, to the Mavs, to whoever they see. They have the upper advantage because one side of the ball, they already have that on their side, and that's defense. People are talking about John Calipari leaving Kentucky, rightfully so, obviously. It went downhill, I guess since 2020, after the COVID season, Kentucky's just been downhill. Now, they've made the tournament yet, but they've lost the first weekend in the past 2 years. It's a new era. The people in Lexington, they don't care for Cal anymore. And, you know, the marriage ran its course. It ran its course. The partnership, the friendship, whatever people want to call it ran its course. Now, he's in Arkansas, which I think is interesting, not because they play twice a year, but I think it's interesting that he's there right after Eric Musselman left. I feel like that's an interesting place for him to be. Like, Arkansas was random. But I think Arkansas is going to be I think Arkansas is going to be fun to watch. I don't know what they'll do next year. He literally said they don't have a team. They literally don't have a team right now. They have one player. But he's going to build a roster. Cal is going to build a great roster, probably. And hopefully here in Arkansas, he does better in tournament. But Cal's going to build a roster. I will tell you that right now. So whatever recruits UK may have had, whatever he had going, whatever motion he had going on UK, it's about to be going on Arkansas. And hearing that he gets, I think I heard he gets the most NIL money in the nation, or a top five NIL money in the nation. I know he's really up there in terms of giving money out to these kids, but he's going to build a roster. He has the NIL money. He's John Calipari, new star for him. He's in Arkansas. He's still in the SEC. He's still in the South. He's going to get the best kids. He's going to get the best recruits. And now with NIL money, with, I hope, a more humble Cal, a more, modest Cal here in Arkansas, I hope he learns that it's a new era and that it's okay to build a program and it's okay to keep star players or not. No, I don't want to say that. It's okay to find players who are stars and that want to stay and to build a culture and a program. I hope he finds those type of players, rather than the Rob Dillinghams and the Reed Shepherds, who obviously are amazing and are going to be amazing in the next level. But they're there for the next level. We want you to win, and you're just getting guys so they can go to the next level and have fun. That era is over. Nobody cares about that. Nobody cares about your 15 point guards in NBA and your 20 big men and your 30 wings. It's a new era. It's time to win. People are questioning if you can coach, which I think it's crazy to say people say Cal can't coach. I mean, he can coach, but people are questioning it. People are saying it. You got a huge year on the line coming up this October, late October, early November. It's a huge year for John Calipari. I saw Roy Williams retire. I saw Coach K retire the year after that. Tom Izzo's still around. Jim Boeheim's gone. Rick Pitino's still around. But those three, Rick, Tom, John, this fall is huge for them. This fall is huge for all those guys. And I hope they have huge years, especially Calipari. He needs it. He needs it. I almost forgot. People keep talking about Kentucky is about to get Dan Hurley. They're calling Dan Hurley. They offered him this. They offered him that. I'm going to say it right now, there is zero chance Dan Hurley goes to Kentucky. And if he does, I'm going to sound stupid, but there is zero chance Kentucky gets Dan Hurley. Sit there and think about it. Why would a coach leave a blue blood to go to another blue blood? He's leaving UConn. I know it's UK. It's the biggest brand in college basketball, probably, arguably. But it's UConn. They have 6 chips since 2000. He's not leaving UConn. And if somehow, some way, he does find himself a situation where he fixes his mouth and says, I'm considering going to Lexington, UConn should offer him the bank. Because you can't go back-to-back as a blue blood and lose the best coach in America, by far the best coach in America, and let him go to another blue blood. And the blue blood just happens to be UK, the biggest brand in basketball. So, no, that can't happen. I don't think it will happen. I obviously don't know Dan Hurley. Never met the guy. But, bro, come on now. They won every tournament game in the past 2 years by over 12 points. And they just won 2 championships in a row. They're 12-0 in their past 2 years in the conference tournament. In the NCAA tournament, they're 12-0 the past 2 years. That has not been said since Florida in 2007 and 2008. That might not ever be said. Like, that's next level stuff. You win every tournament game by at least double digits, by at least 12, 13 points. March Madness. It's called March Madness, and there's no madness going on at UConn. They're just destroying everybody like it's a regular January game. Yeah, he's leaving to go to Kentucky. Yeah. I don't see it happening. Kentucky, though, I think Scott Drew would be great for them. But I think I just saw some Scott Drews out of it. But Scott Drew would have been perfect. Scott Drew would have been perfect. I think Bruce Pearl is a great fit for Kentucky. Not a lot of Kentucky fans would like to hear that. But I think Bruce Pearl at UK would be great. I would love Bruce Pearl at UK. I would love Jay Wright at UK. Who would touch UK if Jay Wright was there? Nobody. But Jay Wright loves Jay Wright loves being on set with Charles Barkley and Adam Lefkoe and them. Scott Drew said he's staying at Baylor because his wife does not want all that attention. Dan Hurley's not leaving after going back-to-back. That's stupid. I don't know who else UK is going to get. I don't know who else they're going to get. I would call Bruce Pearl, though. I would call Bruce Pearl. I'd probably call Nate Oates. I'd probably call Bruce Pearl. I'd call Mick Cronin out of UCLA. I would certainly call him. And I would call Jay Wright. That would be the four. Jay Wright, though, is unrealistic, but he's not tied down anywhere. So why not? Why not? He won two championships 3 years at Villanova a couple years ago. So why not? But Dan Hurley to UK is crazy, though. I don't know how they even started. Like a couple days for the championship game, I saw something about Dan Hurley leaning to Kentucky. Like, what are we doing? He's preparing for a national championship game against Purdue. And we're leaking stuff that Dan Hurley's linked to Kentucky. No, he's not. No, he is not. Stop. He's not. Speaking of Dan Hurley, I wanted to dive into Dan Hurley a little bit more in UConn. You lose multiple players in the NBA, Hawkins, Sanogo, whoever else. They lost three to four players to the NBA. They bring in a transfer. They bring in a freshman who starts in Stephon. And I already mentioned it, but they won every tournament game by double digits. The sets that Dan Hurley was calling, I mean, just out of this world type of offense. They would have someone on the wing. They would have a big set of down screen, and then someone, and then whoever got I'm sorry, I'm over mentioning my terminology. But whoever the screener is, they would turn around and slip to the rim. Whoever was guarding the big that was throwing the entry pass, they didn't know what to do. I don't know what play was called. I don't know what it's called or anything. But the dude is literally on the wing. There's a player at the the dude is on a short corner. There's a player on the elbow. The player sets a screen, then he goes towards the free throw line, sets another screen, and then he slips out to the I don't know. I really don't know how to describe it because the way the offense is ran, like, you just don't see those type of plays from coaches. They ran some stuff I've never seen before. They ran some stuff you would never even think of trying to do. And they got in a national championship, they were getting open dunks and buckets, it felt like, the whole second half. And it's just like, There's just a level that Dan Hurley's on right now that I don't think anyone's going to touch or anyone will touch anytime soon. And the way he builds his program, the way he installs his mindset on his guys, the way he has relationships with his guys, which I think is very important for college coaches. You need to have a relationship with your players or you won't succeed. But the way he has a relationship with his guys, the way his guys install his mindset, you can see it the way they play. They play to what he acts. Dan Hurley's crazy. He'll walk on the court, push his player around to play. He did that in a championship game. He did that a couple years ago in a conference tournament in 2022. I saw him literally walk on a court. In 2021, I saw him literally walk on a court and got a technical foul because he pushed someone on the court because they didn't run to play. I mean, it's stuff like that. He's a maniac. And those players, when they go out there and play, when Cam Spencer's on the floor, he looks like a maniac. Looks like a man possessed because his coach is a man possessed. They all want it. They all fight. They're hungry. Their attitude, it just, everything that you see from UConn's players, it reflects from their coach. It's because of their coach. And I just have to appreciate it. I really appreciate that because man, it's just, you just don't see, you just, like, I feel like we don't see coaches really express themselves to their players or express themselves, like, not to their players verbally, but the way he expresses himself physically with his body language on the court during interviews, it's almost like he's a player's coach. Wow, what a shocker. A player's coach is winning. We don't have too many of those. But yeah, that's why I appreciate it now, because he's a true player's coach and he embodies what he wants through his players. He shows us what UConn is through his players. And the way he thinks and his mindset and his aggressiveness and his assertiveness, whatever you want to say, older players have it. Older players have it, man. They have the culture. They have the swag. They have everything. UConn had everything these past 2 years. And they're going to continue to have everything as long as Dan Hurley is there. And I really appreciate Dan Hurley. I wanted to shout out to him, Bobby Hurley Sr., all those, the Hurley family is just a family of winners. And I want to congratulate Dan Hurley. And I really appreciate Dan Hurley because, like I said, we don't see players, coaches anymore like that. And it's sad. He is a player's coach. That is all I have for today on Ball Talk with Bun. Excuse me. I'll see you guys next week.